last time when we met that we were in processing the bills that were left the Department of Public Enterprises, and ESCOM to come in very fast, not on the bills, because we have been briefed on the bills, but to the recipients of these resources that we are processing, you know, how are they going to help you? You can see all of us are worried about load shedding. I've got my own coach, I'm not relying on ESCOM. I would like to welcome the department, ESCOM team. You are meeting with the joint committees of appropriations, both the National Assembly and the NCOT. We've also invited the portfolio committee of public enterprises, I don't know if they are here, so that we can all look at these matters. We did say that although we might have the department and ESCOM, but it's okay if you do one presentation. I don't know how we have worked it out. If it's two separate presentations, we'll look into that. But if you have one presentation, it should be fine. So, honorable members, I welcome them on your behalf. And introduce yourselves and then make the presentation. Because by Friday, we would like to try and release members by 10 o'clock. So, let's try and do as much as we can between now and then. Okay, I'm not sure who's going to start. Dr. Lefe, is it you? DG, we give it over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to committee members and colleagues. Chair, as you indicated, I'm also joined by colleagues from the Department of Public Enterprises as well as ESCOM, and I'll just request your indulgence that they quickly introduce themselves so that you know who you're interacting with.
Good morning, my name is Makgola Maguru. I'm the acting DVP for Energy in the Public Enterprise.
Good morning, my name is Brian Mayfair, acting Chief Executive, ESCO.
Good morning, my name is Fred Dindo. I'm the acting Digital Executive, the Office of the Chief Executive.
Good morning, my name is Melashin Maguru, the acting DVP Legal and Governance.
Good morning, my name is Nonguru Lego Veleki. I'm the acting CFO at ESCO.
Good morning, my name is Abraham Madamo, acting Group Executive for Group Capital Division.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Ndumbi Nematomeza, Parliamentary Affairs Advisor, ESCOM.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Chair Tuani from National Treasury.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Chair.
My name is Kuita Siwes, I'm the acting spokesperson for ESCOM.
Good morning, my name is Mpale Nokia, assistant to the PM of the ministry.
Good morning, Chair, Advocate Anthony Midden, in charge of Freedom Party Chief of Staff.
Okay, that's fine. I think we know the rest of the people decide. Don't worry about the people decide. As they speak, they need to just emphasize. Yeah, okay. DJ, we can go.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I deliberately decided not to introduce myself first because my name is Mazeti Mokolo. I'm the acting director general in the Department of Public Enterprise. So it's safe to say I am the main actor and the lead of this acting Hollywood. Chair, to maybe start with to explain how we've decided to approach this request by the committee. The presentation, for two presentations. The presentation by the department talking the main two issues, the issue of the support package and the issue of the subordinated role. Then Eskom will come in towards the end, and their presentation will deal with two issues, to zoom into the activities that the company is embarking on and to share with the committee what measures they are putting in place to address the financial sustainability, and maybe to talk about the issue that we cannot avoid, the issue of load shedding, and then the CE will give the details on that one. Chair, also record the apology for the Minister of Public Enterprises, Minister Lingua, as well as the Deputy Minister, but we can safely confirm, Chair, that we are fully mandated and we are in a position to engage with the committee. Chair, our presentation is looking to determine the approved support package, the conversion of the subordinated loan, and then the NESA selective reopener, and then we'll make some concluding remarks. And I think maybe safe at this stage, just to contextualize this presentation, that Eskom financial and liquidity challenges, they have been similar for some time, and I think they stretch back really to 2008. Although the company went out to the market to secure borrowings through the bonds issuance as well as the back of the government guarantee, it became clear that it was not enough to address the existing funding gap. Therefore, in 2014, the board took a decision to approach government as a shareholder for an equity injection. But in taking a decision to approve the support package, government also indicated that the idea is to make Eskom a sustainable company. So we needed to look into the activities not only of what some shareholder can do to support the company, but also what the company can be able to do itself. So you see as the company goes through this presentation as well, and it will touch on some of the issues, what we call the ideas that the company can put on the table to start developing a sustainable financial position for itself. So as required by law, Chair, we are required to come and present before you as committee members, because the appropriation of the support package must be introduced in a legislative and parliamentary process, and also setting certain PFMA compliance requirements both from the department and Eskom. Eskom management will primarily focus on three issues in the short term over the next 100 days, and as I said, the three will go into those in detail. But firstly is their liquidity issues. They will focus on ensuring that the company is viable, but we believe that this will also require robust financial prudence from Eskom executive. Then the second issue is operational performance, and I think the current constraint on the grid requires therefore that the company prioritize critical maintenance so that they are able to make sure that they reduce the impact of the load sharing. Then the third issue is governance, and in this case it's really governance, not at the board, because at this stage we believe that the board is stable. The board was introduced in December last year. It's more governance around the issue that will be dealt by the CE in order to strengthen the management. As you see, we have a number of vacancies and acting positions. So this will talk to the issues of capacity building in the company, ensuring that it has appropriate skills in the right areas, and ensuring the most important thing being accountability at all levels of management. Chair, this slide just sets the scene in terms of what happened in 2014 when Eskom made an application to government for support package. This a number of scenarios, Chair, were developed and identified in order to indicate what could be the most effective levers to support the company. I think initially when the company started, they indicated a deficit expenditure of 300 billion, and they also identified that this expenditure would be supported by a number of savings within the company, a percentage of 70 and 75. And then also took into account if like there will be a need for a tariff increase, and it worked on the basis of a 13% tariff increase. And so far as government support is concerned, they were looking at government injecting an amount of 50 billion. So this scenario therefore indicated that if this were to be pursued, it means then there would be no, there would be a positive impact on their credit rating as well as their cash flows. And also they would be able therefore to introduce competitiveness that would ensure affordability. And also there would be a reasonable return on the assets by 2018 of about 4.7%. So yeah, that was the first scenario. But initially, NERSA looked at an amount of 250 billion, so they're not what the company had initially required. Then the highlighted portion, number five, chain, speaks to what we term the ideal scenario. Meaning, if you look at the amount, it will still be around 300 billion with the 75% coming through the savings of the company. But this would at a tariff increase of 19%. But then that would mean there would be no government support. So the critical takeaway probably from this would be at that point we were looking at if ESCOM is allowed a tariff increase of 19% over the period of 2015-2017 MYPD, then it means there would be no requirement for government support. But the issue of tariff became a very deep engagement because economic climate would not have favored an increase of 19% at that stage. So, and maybe just lastly to mention that this scenarios really were influenced by three factors within the company. Firstly, as I said, it was the NERSA decision, but it was also the cost of primary energy in ESCOM, the main being diesel and coal. And the last issue was the current food program. So, those scenarios, they were put as part of the application by the company, and in response, government responded, and we have summed up government's response into four main categories. The first one was the issue of tariff. Government approved support for ESCOM to apply for an overall tariff increase as would be determined by the regulator. But the support factored into account the 7 billion that was already approved by the regulator in terms of the regulatory bearing account. Then the second aspect was FPT. The support approved an injection of 23 billion, as we are all now aware, and this was also to help the company to address and provide a relief on the consumers in terms of the electricity. Then the third issue was the subordinated loan and the debt, and I think the idea that let's continue approving the conversion of the subordinated loan that was provided to ESCOM, the 60 billion, and this would also be able to afford the company the ability to raise additional debt, which is estimated to 52 billion. And then the last issue that in considering the package, government also felt that you need to create ESCOM as a responsible company. Therefore, there were conditions that were put to the company to look in terms of its own operations and identify activities that it can introduce to sustain itself. So those included ESCOM implementing a cost containment program, which was introduced through the business productivity program, and also the effective management of the bill to address and arrest the cost escalations as well as the further delays. And further, the cabinet indicated that they would like ESCOM not to invest in future coal mines so that they can retain the expenditure and as well as the cost. And then clear that no provision should be made for additional capex requirements. ESCOM was also required to introduce measures to manage its working capital, and as well as to ensure that it is effective maintenance to maintain its generation plans. And I think the CE will talk in detail in terms of the maintenance philosophy that has been introduced in that regard. And lastly was the issue of efficient procurement to make sure that the company leverage all in what it's been lacking in terms of the to finalize the build program. Chairperson, this slide talks to the some of the performance metrics that were looked into in respect of ensuring that then the government support package is effective for the company. But I think the takeaway from this slide, Chair, is the portion that is highlighted in green, because currently we all aware that ESCOM was not servicing the even the interest on the loan that was provided to the government, no paying the guarantee fees. But what is the slide indicates is that the ESCOM situation will, we believe that will start improving in the last year of the NYPD 3 period. And we're looking at the debt service cover ratio of 2.5%, and that then will allow the company to be able to save its debt. The combination of price increases, business efficiency savings through their PPP, the extra borrowing and the equity injection, we believe will result in an improvement of this financial matrix over this period of the NYPD. Then, Chair, zooming to the issue of the subordinated loan, just in brief to indicate that the loan was extended to the company in 2008, and it has been reviewed by the rating agencies, Moody as a 50% equity. A brief history of that loan, Chair, is that it was provided in December 2018 as a rationale that to allow the company to service all other creditors, then making government essentially the creditor of last resort. So ESCOM pays a fixed interest rate on each of the tranches of the loan, but that is also conditional on its interest cover ratios being favorable. So, and that's part of those, the previous slide that spoke to the issue of those credit metrics. Then the other issue, Chair, is the liability and the equity. Initially, on recognizing the 30.5 billion, this was classified as equity, and the 29.5 was classified as a loan. The valuation of the liability is reviewed on an annual basis, and that if it's deemed appropriate, it can be remeasured. By the 1st May 2015, the liability was valued at 27 billion. So, Chair, what we wanted to bring to the committee really in terms of the conversion of the loan was that there are great advantages to both ESCOM and government to convert the loan to equity, because then it will allow us the company to approach the markets. But most importantly as well that we need to bring to the committee is that it means effectively that the government will give the debt that has been extended to ESCOM. And then ESCOM then will not be required to repay that loan, so freeing up its borrowing capacity. And we believe that therefore that will make the company attractive to the lender and provide the company as well leverage in terms of negotiating for favorable terms. Chair, I think this slide we've spoken to some of the details, but safe to say as well that in 2008, ESCOM was downgraded by Moody's, and while the other credit rating agency, Standard & Poor's, had placed the company on a negative credit watch. Now, there are a number of reasons for the downgrade, but the biggest way, ESCOM was embarking on a large scale investment expenditure, and this was as a result of government decision in 2004 mandating ESCOM to fast track the construction of the new power station. And the second reason also was the little contribution to the incremental aims in the medium term. And this that goes to the next point, that talks to the tariff increases which were lower than what ESCOM had requested from the regulator. Then the next, the other reason here was at that point there were a number of policy uncertainties as to how government would look at ESCOM, and I think one of the biggest was at that point the discussion around the introduction of the independent systems and market operator. And so the credit rating agencies were viewing the policy space as being uncertain, and they were not convinced in terms of how ESCOM would be viewed in the future. So ESCOM's ability to source its funding requirements was hugely dented as a result of this downgrade, and the way the lenders were willing to come in, they were willing to do so, but at a high cost to the company. So in order to support and stabilize the credit rating, so ESCOM needed government assistance, and that was provided in terms of that 60 billion coordinated loan. So here on this slide, I think it still provides the further amplification on the advantages and the rationale for the conversion. And we believe that the conversion should be supported so that it can afford the company an opportunity to have a positive outlook. And also the loan really does not generate into any cash or the service relief because it is currently not being serviced. And also we believe that the equity will be able to help defend and over time assist the company to recover its investment credit rating. So over the remainder of the MYTD, the impact on financial ratios are estimated to be an increase on the interest cover ratio as well as on the debt equity ratio. In conclusion, we believe that the conversion of the loan is critical to ESCOM to increase its balance sheet and to improve financial ratios, which currently affect its position with the rating agencies, and it will fill up additional borrowing capacity. But we also believe that the implementation of the selective reopener is critical to ensure that the business is in a positive financial position in the 2016 financial year, and in terms of its liquidity and profitability. So on that note, I would hand over to the ESCOM CE to talk to specific ESCOM activities.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I think I must apologize that this presentation was not part of the presentation that was distributed by the department because it was only yesterday that was decided that we should perhaps amplify the presentation of the department by a supplementary presentation from the school. I will talk about certain introduction and then our financial situation as well as issues related to the city. Chairperson,
thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I heard the explanation which Mr. has stated. Explanation of why we're going to the documentation. But I would like to request Chairperson that as quickly as possible and as short as possible, if we could just see the presentation, because it assists one to actually know whatever you are saying, and if one wants to make some little note of a particular area. So to you, Chairperson, and your support staff, if we could probably ensure that while the continuous information is given to us. Thanks, Chair.
If we can email it to our team, they can go and print. Was
it's a family first present. Mm-hmm. Another sick in was the city. Very good. Okay.
Yeah. You are saying, because obviously there's a very important matter, which we believe it's a 23 billion matter plus us. So we feel it's important that we have documentation.
Okay. That will go and print the documents. You can proceed in the meantime.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, we are referring to the power utility and we supply 91% of the system. Supply 95% of South Africa's electricity and the fourth largest in the world in terms of fuel capacity. Our labor relations have matured over time since 1998 and we've never had a strike except for isolated, localized incidents or work stoppages. The strikes that we're currently experiencing is the strikes of the employees of our contractors and not of ESCOM. We are currently undertaking a 280 billion capital expenditure program. And since 2001, we have added 32 generating units into our capacity, increasing the number of current units to 121. The unit has been synchronized, giving us currently about 800 megawatts. Today, it's something about 500 megawatts because there are tests that are being done, but it will get into commercial operation at the end of August. And the Ferrer Wind Farm is completed and has been 100 megawatts. And delays in the new build capacity, the new build program has been caused largely by strife and technical underperformance of our contractors. We have a maintenance schedule. For whatever reason, we did not work as diligent in maintenance as we should have been over years. And so at the moment, we have a maintenance schedule. And this has led to deteriorating power station availability and flexibility of chain. We need a minimum of about 3,000 to 5,000 megawatts and through supply side or demand side options between 18 to 24 months to avoid load shedding and to deal with our maintenance backlog. But at stage one load shedding, we still supply 96% of the required demand. And at stage two load shedding, we still supply 94% of the required demand. Although load shedding is a problem, even with load shedding, we are still able to supply in excess of 90% of the electricity requirement of South Africa. We have added about 150,000 new electrification customers in the last financial year, mainly residential and mainly for poor areas and rural areas. On the distribution side, we have sustainably reduced the duration of customer interactions over the last 3 years by close to 10 hours per annum, and we are finalizing a 10-hour strategy addressing our financial strength, operational excellence, and as well as new bill coverage to just have this lost time in new bills. And we realize that a strong and sustainable ESCO is needed for a sustainable economy. The capital portfolio is made up of new capacity, the 280 billion, new capacity of 159 billion, major overhauls with life refurbishment, 29 billion, refurbishment and replacement of 63 billion, customer connections, 10 billion, and compliance to environmental safety and regulatory and legal requirements in terms of our operations of 19 billion. So that is compliance capital expenditure. So we're going through an intensive capital investment phase, and I will come back to this a little bit later. But we will need liquid through this financial year. At the minimum, we need to break even in the current financial year, which will require a close monitoring of our expenditure as well as improved sales and collections from customers. We're pursuing a maintenance strategy without load shedding. So we're going to try and catch up with maintenance without load shedding. and also how we intend to pursue this. This is our plan. So the proof of it will be in the execution of the plan, and I will go into how we hope to do maintenance conversion. And the new build program is expected to deliver 3 units in the current financial year. We do give 1 unit, and Igola will deliver 2 units. We are funded through various sources, equity from shareholders, revenue from the sale of electricity, as well as debt raised through local and international markets from a variety of lenders. And these are our three main sources of cash. This one is quite important because it shows what has happened to Eskom over the years. In the beginning, which is really not bad, somewhere in the 1940s, Eskom started building power stations. And when you start building power stations, you have a huge capital requirement, which makes you to be cash negative. So in the beginning, Eskom was cash negative. The power stations were not built from Eskom's revenue because it did not have any. They were built from debt as well as equity injections from the state. And over the years, through the 50s and the 70s, those power stations generated income, and Eskom became cash positive, and we saw an improvement in the cash situation, which deteriorated in the 1980s. So in the 1980s, we actually had extensive load shedding in South Africa. And we, in the 1980s, we were in the situation that we are in now, because at the time, we required new power stations, and we had a maintenance backlog that also resulted in load shedding. So this, what is happening at the moment to Eskom is not new. It happened in the 80s, and it was a phase. The investments were made in the 80s, and right through the 1990s to 2005, we became cash positive again. And in that upward trajectory, we're able to pay back debt, and we're able to have good financial statements, returns, EBITDA, and profits. And you can go and look into Apple's financial statements during that period. In fact, we were in a cash positive situation. But even the power stations that were built in the 1980s are now beginning to give us problems, because now they are old, they require maintenance. And during this phase, between the 1990s to 2005, we did not plan to invest the excess cash that we were making into new power stations and into providing for maintenance that we require now. So we did not use that cash in a way that allowed us to make the cash available during the inevitable government phase that is now concerning us. So since around 2006, we've been on a downward phase where we need more and more cash for maintenance, because our plants were built in the 1980s and some of it in the 1930s and 40s, as well as new builds, Kusile and Midupi and so on. And so this purple dot here is actually where we are at the moment, just before the bottom, from a cash situation. So we are in a phase where our capital expenditure for the year, for example, is 60 billion, which was ahead of in the 1990s that we had such huge capital expenditure. And we think that when Kusile and Midupi and the current projects have been finalized, which is at the bottom there, we have caught up with the maintenance backlog, which is another 2 to 3 years, we will start again a new cash phase. What should be different about this cash phase is that we should learn about what happened in the previous cash phase in the 1990s, and we should emphasize using that cash wisely to gradually and steadily invest in capacity, even in a cash positive phase, so that when the downturn comes again, we will be much better prepared for it. I think this is a lesson that we must learn from this cycle of the phenomenon that is the development of Eskom. So it is going to be very important that in the 2020s, when Eskom starts becoming cash positive and we start repaying debt, and hopefully even dividends to the treasury. But we do it in such a way that we plan for the next down cycle. Chair, this is our cash flow for 2015, and I will ask the Chief Financial Officer to take us through it.
Thank you, C, and good morning to the committee chair. This is an indicative picture of our cash activities in this financial year. What basically says at the top is that we started the financial year with an opening cash positive balance of about 11 billion based on the activities of the previous financial year. We will be selling electricity to our customers and we expect revenue of about 171 billion out of that activity. There's other income of about a billion rand that we're expecting. The biggest expenditure in our financial year is going to be related to the primary energy, which is the production of our electricity, mostly coming from coal production, and also for our plant is the coal plant, 54 billion. We will be using the OCGT, basically the gas turbines, which are using diesel, to about 12 billion rand. We have some contracts with independent power producers, and about 18 billion of electricity will be produced from those contracts, and there's other primary energy costs, water and other elements that go into that. So you can see that out of that 171 billion of electricity sales, we will have to take off 98 billion, 99 billion, which is part of the cost of the production of the electricity. And therefore, from our operations, we will still be positive by another 27 billion, which basically says that from the operations we are cash positive and we are actually still making money out of the selling of the electricity. However, because we have loans, as indicated earlier, that we've had to raise a lot of debt to be able to build the new plant, we have to pay about 27 billion of the loans that we have raised in the past. And there is interest to be paid as well, which is about 24 billion. Based on the loans we have, and that will leave us with a negative then cash. So you can actually see that the negative comes because we begin to pay loans from the past as well as the interest in terms of the loans that we have. The 61 billion capital expenditure that the chief executive mentioned is also a cash outflow as well, and that's for the financial year. And we then have 70 billion cash shortfall. After all those activities, we then raise funding through debt securities, that is the bonds that we have in the market. We are working on a private placement of about 10 billion, and there's other funds of about a billion rand that we want to find raise. That gives a total of gross funding that we need to raise of about 66 billion. At the bottom, we then refer to the injection of the equity of 20 billion, and this then talks to the 23 billion that we are talking about today, because we are expecting that of the 23 billion, 20 billion will be raised in this financial year, and 3 billion will flow in the next financial year. That will then leave us with a cash positive balance of about 15 billion, and that mainly because of the 20 billion cash injection, we are expecting 10 around now in June, and another 10 around close to the end of the financial year. So that will help us to begin to have money to fund the activities of the next financial year. Hence, we have a closing balance of about 50 billion. So you can actually see, Chair, that the 23 billion actually had a very positive impact to Eskom, because without the injection, sorry, the injection and the conversion of the subordinated loan, we have a gearing of 75%, where we're saying debt as a percentage of debt and equity is about 75%. But if we take in the conversion of the loan plus the injection, we actually improve our gearing to about 57%.
Okay, it is worth emphasizing here that in a way that this cash flow statement is structured, you will see that our revenue is adequate to address our primary energy requirement as well as our operating costs, and in fact it's just about 27 billion, and that's the 20 billion will mainly, the 20 billion that we're asking for will go into capital expenditure, because it is capital expenditure of 60 billion, which is quite big, that actually ties us into a negative cash position. It is not salaries, it is not the expenditures, so on and so forth, and a lot of allegations that have been made in the media on cost. The cost we are able to cover through the debt. It is a capital expenditure that we require in this stage of the life of the company. The shortfall there you saw was the funding that is required. We'll need 55 million from securities. Now, the question that gets asked therefore is, will ESCO be able to raise 55 billion in the market? Firstly, you will see that the loans that need to be repaid are 23 billion. Now, those loans that need to be repaid are mainly bonds, ESCO bonds, that mature in September. And what we intend to do is roll over the bulk of the bonds. In fact, we've already started with switch options. Now, switch options mean that we are asking the people who are due to be repaid in September, we're asking them to bring their bonds to escort now, and we issue them with bonds that are that mature in 5 years' time. So there's no cash implication. We minimize the cash impact on the 55 billion, because that includes the 23 billion. Already we've done switch options of in excess of 8 billion. So far, by September we will have done the bulk of the 22 billion, which means that 55 billion, about half of it is actually not cash, it's just the rollover of debt. But we intend to issue fresh escrow bonds of about 8 billion, raise 8 billion. DFIs, about development finance institutions, World Bank, Development Bank, African Development Bank loans, 7 billion. Export credit facilities of 7.5 billion. Export credit facilities are important because of the new build program. We are importing machinery for our new power stations. And when we import machinery from Japan and from the United States and from Europe, they have in their countries current schemes, export credit promotion scheme that we can tap into that guarantee our debt and reduce cost of borrowing. So we intend to use about 10 billion of that. We issue international bonds of about 16.5 billion, commercial paper of about 10 billion, and 7 loans of 6 billion from the BBC. And we are quite confident that we will be able to raise this 55 billion during the financial year. I will ask Mr. Masango, who is the group executive for capital projects, to talk about the capital expenses program.
Thank you, Chair. On the capital expansion project, as you know, that it's been a struggle, but I must give you the assurance that today we have progressed very well. We've seen being completed on that 100 megawatt in February of 2015. But over and above that, I just need to talk about Unit 6 at Metupi. Unit 6 at Metupi on the 26th of May has reached maximum capacity, which is 800 megawatts. Though we are still doing some tests to make sure that once we commercialize it, it's stable and it's running continuously in terms of generating the 800 megawatts. But over and above that, I must also indicate that on the Ingula side, you know the project at Red Smith, we decided to look at that schedule and see whether can we go back. As you know, that our first unit, that unit was supposed to come early next year. But we worked very hard to make sure that at least the first two units before June 2016 are unloading. And after we are trying to make sure that the entire plant at Ingula is on load before end of next year, so that we can be able to release the pressure on the system by producing those 1,382 megawatts that will be generated by that plant. I must indicate to you that over and above that, there's a lot of focus on Medupi and Busile, particularly on Unit 1 at Busile and Medupi Unit 5. That's where our major focus is between early 2017
we want to make sure that the two big units also come on load, which would be able to assist us in releasing pressure. Just to be quite specific, if those two units come on load, we would be able to have more than 1,200 megawatts on load additionally. So from the build program point of view, we are confident that gradually we are closing back the schedule. We have spoken to the different companies that have been giving us problems in terms of the technical performance, and we've agreed with them. They've already brought some of the international expertise to come and assist us with the technical performance that we are experiencing. Right now, we are confident that even despite the difficulty that we experience this year, we are dealing with it. I must give this committee the assurance that out of 12,000 people that we are on strike, 10,000 are already back. Though there's few others that we're still taking them through the disciplinary processes. And we've reviewed our partnership agreement that we put in place at some stage to make sure that it gives us the stability that we want. Over and above that, there's just one thing that I also want to talk about. Remember that at some stage we had the Majuba coal silo collapsing that put the entire Majuba power station at risk in terms of producing the full capacity in that power station. We have worked very hard, Chair, to make sure that we stabilize the power plant. We implemented what we call the gap solution that makes sure that that station is able to produce 80% of the capacity of the power station. At the moment, we are putting what we call interim solution that will allow us to be able to put the infrastructure that will allow the entire plant to put 3,600 megawatts. From that perspective, Chair, I think that will also assist in terms of making sure while we doing our maintenance, we will eliminate the load shedding. However, Chair, the balance of the new build, particularly the other four units at Medupi and five units at Medupi, we also putting a lot of focus in terms of making sure that at least, particularly on the Medupi side, between 2018 and 2019, that project is completed. And then on the Busile side, we're working very hard to make sure that by 2020, Busile is also completed. There are other couple of projects that we are doing on the transmission line. On that side, I must say, Chair, we have put those transmission lines without problem, which basically assisted us to transmit the energy that is being generated from other units. Thank you, Chair.
I don't know if you've already spoken about the slide at this one.
Yeah, that's the slide, Chair, that I was talking about. What you see on that slide, like I indicated, that the first two units of Ebola, that is Ubula 4 and Ubula 3, will have to come in before June, and next year, next month, they will come in this financial year. And then Ubula Unit 1 and Ubula Unit 2, we are going to put them on load before June, and subsequent to that, the greater focus is on Busile Unit 1 and Medupi Unit 5, which will add additional capacity of 1,466 megawatts.
Chair, we thought we should touch on the principle of prepayment, which is quite critical for our finances because prepayment improves our cash flows. It improves our balance sheet ratios because we are able to borrow exactly from our customers, and I think South Africa should consider this at this moment, especially at this time when Eskom really needs a much stronger balance sheet and needs to recover from sub-investment grade ratings. It reduces our long-term debt because it shifts part of our borrowing to short-term borrowing. It increases short-term debt, which is a good thing, because if you can borrow interest-free on short-term from customers, that is much good. It's good for the income statement as well as for the balance sheet. So we thought we should talk about just the benefits of prepaid as part of a general strategy for us.
Chair, I would like to go into the issue of load shedding. The first point to make, and this is quite critical,
is that we have installed capacity of 43,500 megawatts. And our demand on the 5th of May it was 32,180. On a typical winter day it is around 33,000. And yesterday and this week, because of the weather, it has been about 34,000, even going up to 34,500 momentarily. So, however, it's still below 3,500, which is our stored capacity, which means that we do not have a structural problem where installed capacity is less than demand. We, just as a point of departure, we do not have a systemic structural problem. That indicates that our problem is in fact temporary and not systemic. It is due to other factors other than the fact that we do not have. It's not because we don't have enough electricity as a country. We do, but not all of it is available all night, and that is a temporary problem and not a systemic problem. This is an important point to make because people talk as if it has to be about to be shut down completely due to electricity problems, and that's not true. However, from the 43,500, we have to take a portion and switch off a portion of the 43,500 for planned maintenance. Now, planned maintenance is like a car that is due for service at 20,000 kilometers. So you call the garage and book it for next Thursday and you take it in, and that is planned. So on the 5th of May, we have planned maintenance of 6,500 megawatts. Currently, as I'm talking to you, our plant maintenance is about 4,500 megawatts. But over and above the plant maintenance, because our plant is old, we have unplanned maintenance. Now, these are things that just break down and need to be repaired. And these repairs take typically 3 days, 4 days, sometimes 5 days. The biggest reason for unplanned maintenance at the moment is a thing called a tube leak, which is a leakage of a tube inside the boiler. And that typically takes about 4 days. And we have a huge amount of our maintenance breakdowns due to tube leak. In fact, this week, and we were managing the system well until Sunday. And this week we had a series of events that led to maintenance that broke the system that we had implemented. And I'll come back to that very soon. But we had losses of 1,200 megawatts from Mozambique, from Corabasa, as a result of a unplanned breakdowns in Corabasa. They have since been fixed at this morning. We are back at 1,000 megawatts and we'll be going back to 1,400 by this afternoon. Secondly, we have installed capacity, installed electricity that we get from solar. And the solar panels are based in the Northern Cape. And we actually had cloud cover over the Northern Cape at the beginning of this week. And we lost about 300 to 400 megawatts from solar power in the Northern Cape, which was also not planned and unprecedented. But those are just two examples of the things that went wrong in the red box. The problem with the red box is sometimes it pushes us to ignore demand, the maximum demand that is required in a particular day. And the difference below the gray line, which is total maintenance, which is total installed capacity minus total maintenance, as it goes to below demand, the result is an unavailability or inability to meet part of the demand, and that leads to load shedding. So that is what causes load shedding. In addition to that, I think it is worth adding that just below the red line, we have quite a number of units that are not broken down yet, but are about to break down. So if you think about it, like in a car, when the little engine light goes on in the car, that means that there is something wrong in the engine, the car is going. But if you don't stop and take it to a garage, it will break down. Or when it says it's overheating, and there's a red light that comes on. So we have about 6,000 megawatts of risk maintenance that needs to be done. The risk maintenance and the planned maintenance and this breakdown. This breakdown and the risk maintenance are a result of our maintenance backlog. So if we had been diligent with philosophy maintenance, which is planned maintenance. If we had been taking our fleet out for maintenance at the required times, we would not be having a lot of units at risk. We would not be having a lot of units that are breaking down. And consequently, we would not be having load shedding. Now, I will not go into the reasons why we are in this situation, but this is the objective situation that we find ourselves in that we need to deal with. Question is, how do we deal with it? Check. If we are to do maintenance without load shedding, if we are to do maintenance without load shedding, we would have to give ourselves a budget of maintenance, a maintenance budget. The maintenance of budget will be made up of the total installed capacity minus the maximum demand at the moment in winter, about 33,000, and then we'll have to add an additional 1,000 megawatts for temperature reserve, and that leaves us with 9,500 megawatts. So if we can keep our planned and unplanned maintenance to within 9,500 megawatts during June, it will be possible to do maintenance without load shedding, which means prioritization of maintenance as well as operating within a different budget. At the moment, the way we do maintenance like children in a candy store. Whatever breaks down, whatever is due, and so on, we do it without consideration of the impact on the availability of plants for load shedding. And load shedding is very, very expensive because if we cannot avoid load shedding, we're damaging the economy, we're damaging the reputation of Eskom, and we're at the risk of damaging the reputation of the Republic of South Africa with further downgrades from the rating agencies. So we have to do maintenance in a proper fashion, and that is by allocating ourselves a maintenance budget that allows us to do maintenance without load shedding. We have been implementing this very well until this last weekend. We had a good run from the end of May into the beginning of June until Sunday, and then this weekend, about Monday, this red block suddenly just ballooned out. We have measures, we've been talking about this, we have measures to contain it. As of today, we will be beginning a recovery phase because Paunabasa has come back, we've had some load losses that we're clearing, and we've also had some units that are returning from maintenance. And by the weekend, we hope to have recovered and go back to what we were doing prior to last weekend, where we had close to 11 days of no load shedding during maintenance. So we hope we can be able to go back to that and manage our maintenance in this framework of our allowing ourselves a maintenance budget. This 33,000 will come down when the weather improves. So this is a typical winter day. This is like a doomed time. When the weather improves in hopefully end of July and August and September, the demand goes down to about 28,000, which increases our capacity for maintenance. In addition, we will explore ways of increasing this 43,000 by gas turbines and other things that we can bring in. That will take 6 to 9 months to bring in to augment our electricity supply. And if we can increase that 43,000 and reduce the 33,000, we'll be able to do more maintenance and catch up more without load shedding. The important thing is going to be to do it without load shedding. We limit ourselves to doing maintenance without load shedding. So at the moment, I think this is the worst case scenario at 9,500. We can increase that 9,500 easily to about 13 or 14,000 megawatts of maintenance at any one point in time without load shedding. I think that is quite important. That this is our strategy, this is our plan. We're not always saying that things will work out according to plan and things will break down, unforeseen breakdowns and so on, but at least this is our plan and we're going to stick to it. This is what I was explaining, that maintenance, planned maintenance and unplanned maintenance. And, planned maintenance is made up of philosophy, safety and efficiency maintenance, and risk maintenance is the yellow box that translates into breakdowns. If you want to be mathematically correct, you have to add another term here, which is called the stochastic variable, or the error test, the unknown, the thing that is random that will happen to that equation. It has to add a little new. If we were to be, if there are any professors of engineering or mathematics here, who would insist on a random variable like Harabas are bringing now, which is random and cannot be predicted. Thank you, Chair. That is our presentation.
Thank you very much to the team, honorable members. We now take comments from your side. We received a lot of information, so we know where the 23 billion is going and what it's going to do. I'll start with Honorable Sheikh Imam, who wants to be next. Honorable Agropa, the next. You can start there, Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me start off by thanking you for the presentation. It gave us a much clearer picture of exactly what is going on. Most of us are not experts in this particular field, so it's very difficult to understand the challenges that you may be facing. But before I really get on asking my question, there's one very important question that I want to ask. And it has been brought to my attention that ESCOM has written a letter to the President, Jacob Zuma, stating that there's a very strong possibility, shocking, we may have to load shed for a period of 2 weeks, 24 hours a day, to such an extent that hospitals and clinics have been advised accordingly. I don't know if you would actually comment on that. That is actually quite a frightening thing if that is the case, but I don't know. This has been brought to my attention from some of the hospitals in the Western Cape today, 2 days ago, that apparently there is a correspondence between ESCOM and government in terms of that. No, I haven't. Yes, people that have told me have actually seen it, and that's why I'm asking this question, because if that is not the case, I'm suggesting that we go out into the media and let people know that, you know, that everything is under control, because it's creating some kind of panic. And we're talking about 2 weeks I've been put of continuous load shedding, and that is really fine. But that is the message that has gone out. People that have come to brought it to my attention have seen the correspondence apparently between ESCOM and government. So if it was just, I'm not saying that is the case, I'm hoping that it's not the case, but I'm saying if that is, to ensure that you know there's no panic and that is not the case, maybe we need to go out more on the communication. But it's like the information you've given us here is very important. But people on the ground don't understand these things. You know, everybody just perceives we are failing, we can't go ahead, we can't do this, we can't do that. Communication seems to be a challenge in many other departments in terms of getting that message across. One of the questions I want to ask is, I know your presentation is basically based on what really means a lot of money. The question I want to ask is, I think you've given a clearer picture of where we are, what our capacity is, what we can supply, what are the challenges that you face from time to time in terms of breakdowns and what it is. When and how long will it take us, and how much of money do you believe? The issue of government providing funding in terms of loans, for me, a simple thing is we're not giving loans. ESCOM is part of the government entity, and we are giving out monies to be able to provide this additional capacity that we need to build, to be able to meet the demand without any load shedding affecting business and whatever it is. So I want to know, how much do you believe is needed to be able to resolve the problem to the extent that we do not have to have a little bit of a crisis? I'm not saying it's much of a, but there are certain challenges. The first thing, how long do you believe it will take, with even all the money available tomorrow, you may not be able to do it because building power stations or whatever you need will probably take a period of time. I've always been saying to people conservatively, I believe our problems will go over between 3 to 5 years. I'm hoping that's what I'm going to get. that's the next question that I have. The other thing is, the emphasis is on capital expenditure, which is what we really need to meet demand. Do you believe it is fair that we continuously go and allow the consumers to bear the brunt of that cost, in light of the fact that this is capital expenditure, not a cost basically. If you look at the cost to consumers and things, profit, a business entity, if that's where you would look at it, I'm saying each fare, for as taxpayers, we pay taxes. We're now paying electricity. Now we have to go one step further to pay for actual capital expenditure to build these power stations. We get some stakes. ESCOM's going to be in a very viable and profitable. You're then going to consider using the cost to consumers. Yes, you know, because I think it will be payback time actually for our consumers. Well, I think, I mean, if you look at the percentage increase, it's going to be very, very difficult. Please understand that I do understand the challenge of ESCOM, and you need to change that early. You need that capital injection to be able to resolve these issues. But I'm not sure whether, you know, the consumer should be bearing the brunt of this. I think as a government entity, I think to a certain extent I will agree that it is our responsibility to provide the funding in terms of capital. If you want to provide the country with the facilities, we must be able to provide capital for expenditure. This would be my understanding, but not the consumers bearing the brunt continuously. It's really impacting on them. Chair, I'm going to come back on this one because I was main concerned about the money. It was quite frightening to me, so I'll leave that and then I'll come back to the media.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you to the presenters. I think really you take away the fear that we have with the sector. The clarity that we have got today, also in particular around the issue of the maintenance without documents, because this is a challenge that the country is facing. And we strongly believe that the development of states where there are challenges that are affecting our citizens, there is a need for government to intervene. We always encourage that for government to intervene where there are problems. And I think you have also, around the 23 billion, clarified this issue. But I want to check, you know, ESCOM in the past used to develop skills, internal skills, around the technical skills. But now is a real challenge, in particular because the more challenge that you are facing is around the old infrastructure. This is really making ESCOM like they are having more challenges. Why now ESCOM are they no more developing technical skills? Because in the past, they were suppliers of those technical skills. So that when you have the challenge of maintenance, you quickly go, because this process of supply chain and so on, it takes a lot of time while they are having such problems in ESCOM. Maybe I think if we can get a clarity, why did you choose that away? And also you have indicated that the backlog is going to be 2 to 3 years and then it starts going up again. Because at the moment we are investing, if you invest, you don't get the profit now, you get it later. I think it's fair. But I want to you to assure us, is this challenge going to take 2 to 3 years and then we are out of this problem? Because we have indicated this much. And also on the issue of, on the issue of that maintenance budget, do you have enough resources? Because you have assured us that on the operational side, there is no crisis. But it's on the capital side that the challenge is there. If you are saying that this is 9.5, that is, or 9,500, that is a maintenance budget, and you said you are going to focus on those unplanned at the moment. You will focus there. If you say you're going to focus on the unplanned, have you checked to say that this is the worst scenario in the unplanned one that will make you focus on there? And you have put down the amount here for new development, like 155 billion. Okay, you have indicated on the main drivers
of the KDF. That, do you mean to say that if you can have that budget, the situation is going to be now, it will go back to the stable, the situation is going to be stable if you have got this budget to these 3 years that you have indicated for us? Or how much will you say that if we get this much, this amount of Eskom to focus on our main drivers, will be in a position to erode the tariff? Thanks.
Okay, Honorable Supervisor, will be followed by Honorable Secretary.
Okay, thank you. I think it is worth noting, Chair, that we are getting the assurance that South Africa has enough electricity. And of course, the problems, the systemic problems that are being, we are told, is not the systemic problems that are being challenged, rather probably the structural challenges, the maintenance, and the building of infrastructure. That's where we are. So I think that kind of assurance gives us confidence in Eskom in the first instance. And I think that should be appreciated. And it's something that we need to say often enough to the public to know. The second area that one to look at is, I just want to understand if, or rather, because it's now given, when we allocate this 23 billion rand to Eskom, does it adequately address the financial challenge that you are facing now in the 2016 financial year? And linked to that, I think the question that was asked earlier on, if you were to turn that purple balloon that you showed us, if we wanted to turn around immediately and not go further down the slope, how much capital do you require so that you are able to turn around the corner without really having to run short of cash? The rollover of the debt, what are the implications in terms of increasing debt? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Everybody in country now, the favorite TV program is Channel 408, and the favorite topic is Eskom, because of what's happening in our country, and we're hoping that it gets sorted out in the near future. We would like to take you into confidence and believe that you are here to solve the problems. It seems as though you had your intention. You've inherited major problems, and I think what the country wants is those problems to be solved. That's it. Because at the end of the day, it's no use flogging a horse that's injured. So we just would like to appeal to you from South Africa. We would like to solve the energy problem. We do understand that you have a 23 billion rand problem at the moment. My concern, or our concern, is that it's not the end. Because we've just come now from a situation where 60 billion has to be converted from a loan to equity. Now, the concern is that that going to be the norm for the coming years. I understand that you've given that cycle, that discussion there, which hopefully is going to materialize. We do understand as well that the future is something that one can't always forecast accurately, but we're just hoping. So, in our view, I think that Eskom, as much as the money is being asked for capital expenditure in order to relieve or to take the burden off the consumer, but we believe that the problem problem is a maintenance and a management problem. If that is sorted out, then I think the rest will follow. You're asking, Eskom is asking for money now for capital expenditure, but my question then is, that amount, does it incorporate the amount that's going to be used for maintenance as well? I do understand that there is a cash flow statement which indicates operational expenditure, but the problem is that, is that going to continue to happen in the future, and that's the concern. That's the one. With regards to load shedding, we have to live with it. We've got no option. But I think, again, the problem that people of South Africa have is that sometimes we get a load shedding schedule which is not adhered to. So it disrupts the lives of people. And maybe while I'm talking on that, maybe one should consider the timing of the load shedding as well. You know, having load shedding at 8 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, surely that can't be right. Some people, you know, maybe one could consider a longer load shedding at midnight. I'm just using that as an example. But it is problematic, you know, so that's just something. All right, and then just other issues for clarification, CEO. We heard at the beginning that the public enterprises were invited to this meeting, but I also hear, and it's a source, I haven't seen the letter, but that they were not allowed to speak at this meeting. So they were allowed to attend this meeting as observers, and hence the absence of the members of that public enterprises. So Chairperson, just thought we'd like, just would like to know that. Yeah. Well, that's a fact.
Who was stopping them from speaking?
Well, whoever invited them, I've got it. Yes, I've got it on here. It's here, so I've seen it. It's not something that I heard from the commission. Yes. Yeah.
No, we are not aware, but everybody is allowed.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I've got it. So can we please leave?
Okay, so
instead of it being amusing, can we just make sure that it wasn't the case, or if it's the case that we, well, we won't be able to recognize not to say, but that is the information I see.
Yes, we will check that, but I don't know why. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with you, but if somebody else cannot support, there's no way that I'm going to.
Members of Parliament are the bosses. It has not been clear. Okay. But we'll check that.
Thank you. Okay. Now, this conversion, I'll just go back to the conversion of the 60 billion rand from loans into equity, it concerns me. Because it seems though it's just a bit of creative accounting, CFO, you know, where you're just moving money between entities, because the state is 100% owner of Eskom anyway. So all you're doing, you're creating a better financial position for Eskom, and the reason that we're doing this is transparent, and I appreciate that, to improve their balance sheet. Now, that is problematic because fine, Eskom has a better balance sheet, but to the detriment of government, because not that government really matters because they can get from citizens. But now their balance, well, not really the balance sheet, the taxpayers at the end of the day are funding an entity that cannot manage its finances. That is a problem. So it becomes a serious. That's why I said at the beginning that it's a management problem and a maintenance problem. So, you know, I'm hoping that this 23 billion rand, we had a presentation by Treasury the other day and we didn't get an acceptable answer as to whether it's a loan or equity, but if you look at the bill says it's equity, and I noticed that it's the equity, so, but it's there. Well, that's fine. If it's equity, then we, at least the people of South Africa know it's equity, and we're not calling it one thing like the 60 billion rand, and then at the later stage converting it to loan. Rather give it as equity in the beginning, then we know what it is, but it's, I'll just be concerned. Because I'm mentioning that because when I look at the cash flow, then I see that there's interest payments and bonds repayments, but Eskom hasn't paid any interest except to the bondholders for the past number of years, so why now would that be factored into the cash flow statement? I beg your pardon? To government, yeah. Well, that's not interest stated because that is why it's been conducted in so long. Because it states in the document in the bill that the interest is payable, but only paid, and they use some fancy word like a subordinated loan, whatever that is. Okay. But never mind. So the point is that the government hasn't received interest on their loan. That's just my point I'm making, Mr. Malefe. These shares that have been issued now, government or in the book, why is there no consideration of shares being given to private individuals or private entities? This equity that has been now converted from government and given to back to government, so it's a loan, and I've given government a higher loan. Why I'm raising that point is because the loan that was given, the equity was 60 billion rand, and that is the exact amount of the loan that was given. In other words, even the interest accrued, which should have been accrued maybe, was not included. So in other words, that loan of 60 billion rand granted 7 years ago was still worth 60 billion rand 7 years later. It's a good loan there. It's a good loan there. Okay. So my question is, why is that not granted to private entities? I know that's a discussion, maybe not for today, but well, offer it to the public.
We are not talking about privatizing.
I know that, yeah. Okay.
Let's avoid that discussion.
That's what I said. Okay. Right, then, apologies, Honorable Chairperson. Then let's ask, does ESCO supply energy or electricity to neighboring countries? Does ESCO give discount to companies, electricity and others, so they get to do all customers get the same rate or similar rates? And then I also see in this document that the cabinet has approved the 23 billion rand already. So by then are we talking about that now? It was approved in September 2014. Why is that considered today? Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, that's all I have today.
All funds will be spent by government and the entities have been approved by Parliament. And that's the reason why we are here. Doesn't mean our cabinet say we are making the money available, but must be approved by Parliament. So that's the process we're engaging. I'm going to take the remaining hands because there's no second round today. We don't have enough time. And Honorable Mark McLaughlin, you're coming. Honorable Shortest Tolley, you are coming. You'll be next. Honorable Manana, you want to come in? No? Okay. I see Honorable Kwaba want to come back later. First, 1, 2, 3. You'll be the last. Honorable Sheikh, let's keep it brief as possible. Honorable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I also just thank you for the presentation. It does explain a few things. I'll try and keep as brief as possible because if I get going, I can keep you busy the whole day. Can I just refer to slide 12 of Eskom's presentation? Total capital expenditure of the year is 60 billion rand, with new builds contributing over 40% of the expenditure. Just as a statement, because it worries me that people in general don't have a good grasp of big numbers. It's just a big number. 60 billion rand is a huge amount of money. From the municipality I come from, the annual budget is 1 billion rand. That municipality has been for 60 years on what you spend in 1 year. It's a huge responsibility you have. And I'm concerned, like my colleague says, about the management of it, because I think that's why we've got into the situation that we're in, because they haven't been keeping an eye on the ball. On that slide, you say in the column on the right, it is critical that each division keeps within the capital allocations. Deviations from the allocated capital expenditure will have an impact on ESCO's financial health and sustainability. And that's saying exactly what I'm saying. If it's mismanaged, we're going to be back here next year explaining the whole thing again and telling us why you need another 30 million or however much it might be. And that is my concern, that we really need to tighten up. And I noted with great dismay this morning when you introduced yourselves that practically every one of you is in an acting capacity. That is scary from the public's point of view. it doesn't seem as though there's much stability here. Is everyone going to be out of a job in the week and then have somebody else in? Just understand where I'm coming from, because the public, who at this point in time are paying taxes, which are being used to fund Eskom, then have to take more money to pay for the electricity they're getting at an ever-increasing rate. And when they look at Eskom, they say, but this is an institution that doesn't even look that secure. Is everybody about to bail out? Is that why we're going to act in positions who's obviously going to hold up? Or is there some major problem? Just, I have that concern. I'd like you to address that concern. I mean, a lot of people look at it and think, but what happens if you don't do that? You're saying it is critical. This will happen if that doesn't happen. So what happens if it doesn't? If you cannot keep to each division with this capital allocation, that's my main concern on that particular issue. And so you made a statement about just on the load shedding, where you showed the that 9,500 is your usual budget. This is now referring to slide number 20. And you made a statement you could easily move that up to 12-13 megawatts. If that's the case, then surely we don't need load shedding at all. Because it only if it goes outside of the bands that you show here that you need to load shed, because then the supply is higher than the demand. But if you say you can easily up it by another 3,000 or 4,000 megawatts, then I'd like to, why are we having load shedding at all if that's the case? It is to try and bait up the fact that you're coming through here and asking for more money, because you're trying to scare the public by saying, oh, we've got load shedding, we've got to force it, we've got to use enough power. And then you come and sit here and say, oh, we actually don't, we've got enough power. But, you know, we're just load shedding the front and just to scare you all into complying with us and effecting a new increase of more money, etc., etc. Please address that issue for me. And then my last question is just, how much does SM actually owe at the moment? What is your total debt already, without the fact that this injection, this new equity, is also going to enable you to loan, borrow more money? That's the reason for doing it, because that's why you want to improve your balance sheet, so it's expected to approach lenders with. How much is the total debt right now? What is the total package we're looking at, and how much are you going to owe by the time it stops, before it starts turning around? Thank you.
Next was with Honorable Shostak.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to apologize for me and Honorable Nyalung. We just arrived. We weren't last at UD yesterday. The whole day we not got very late. I just want to say to Comrade Brian, I know you for a long time. And the day your name was mentioned, I thought the problems are already over. Because, you know, if you look at the report of the Auditor General in the past few years, he used to emphasize on the fact that any institution will perform properly as long as there is leadership. Because that is what we need. Fortunately for us, yesterday, Eskom was highly discussed in our class. People raised issues about this loan that government has to bail out Eskom. And you know, our lecturer was very clear. He said, "This is a development of the state. Government must intervene. We've got a problem." And we all understand where we come from. Because I think the chairperson and myself and all these people, we used to use candles. We are new in the night light. And Eskom used to cater for a very few people. Now it's got to cater for many, many South Africans, which is what we want as government. And the question of accountability, you know, I think as members of parliament, we are equal to the task. We have got to make sure that we do our oversight. We have given the go ahead, but what remains is that ourselves, we need to call you on time, not see your problems at the end of the day when you have to go to scope, but be with you
on an ongoing basis. And I think this is what this committee must do, to trace the runs and sons of the state and ensure that we support institutions. We cannot stand by and talk like the media and then just say, hey, this, there is a problem. Because if there is a problem at the end of a financial year, it means one, maybe people didn't do their work properly, they didn't manage their finances properly. But it also reflects on other members of parliament. It means we were fast asleep. You know? So, I am saying, Chair, we need to support this institution. This is the hope of South Africa. We need to call them on an ongoing basis. We need to allow them to come, to actually ask to come and inform us if they have got progress, so that we become part of the solution. We should not be part of those who say maybe there will be what. We should know, we must keep our fingers on the pulse as members of parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Manan, you want it? Who else was next? Honourable Shekima.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, let me reiterate my point that we believe ESCOM and your leadership is now in good hands, and we are hoping that that is going to be a turnaround and see success. We're not expecting too much too soon, but our progress over a period of time will really, you know, create some confidence in public and worldwide for us. I think one of my colleagues have asked the question, how much we have, what is our debt situation, so how much have we borrowed in terms of what the challenges were. I just want to put it that I don't believe we were ever cash positive, given the fact that we never took maintenance. And I agree with my colleague that we as members of parliament must take responsibility for the situation in this one, because we have done nothing about it over these periods. If we had addressed these challenges from day one and made sure that we provided for these, we would not be sorry. So when we say that we have a challenge, we must remember that all of us as members of parliament and government, we are responsible. We cannot be saying you and me. We are responsible. So we must take a little responsibility. And that is what I believe is the way that we can go forward. I did emphasize on the issue that you know, it would not be good to the issue on the consumers, and then I think you will obviously respond to that. I think somebody did raise the issue of neighboring states, and I want to know what capacity, what is it that we are distributing to, like, Botswana? And I know they have a question, I've just come back on this. There, if you've got more than 10 used in the day, this is just automatic. I don't know what system they are. But I can tell you Botswana's got a crisis in terms of electricity, that I can tell you. But there was one very important question, and pardon me for my ignorance on energy and electricity. Can it not be switched off at hours, or does it have to be switched off at that peak period where the demand? So if you can just, so we know how to respond to our people on the ground and what our challenges are, and not everything. The issue of management. I know at one stage thought I'm in a movie because everybody is attacking. So I want to know how far are you and how much longer is it going to take to put the house in terms of the management, make sure that 19 people are there in the position so that, you know, you can have a better control and management of the organization. I'm not expecting miracles again, but I'm sure the writers will be able to put that in place for some time frame so that we can see some changes in terms of that. The tube leaks, there's a bit of a concern to me, and I know you say it takes a few days to repair them. I can understand. If you could just tell me, what is the challenges? What is it anything to do with where we have to import parts or whatever it is? Can we not at some stage become self-sufficient where we can produce based on our unemployment, based on skills, based on our scientists doing fantastic work in the country? Can we not work with basic education, higher education to try and have our own skills, you know, the partnership together with all these people? So, especially with the machinery, with parts and whatever it is, you know, instead of rather depending on the outside world. Let me rather just leave that. But just one last point. My understanding is that as ESCOM, with your capacity, taking away the challenges we have, based on the revenue you will get from subsidizers and consumers, if you take maintenance with that, what you're going to get revenue based on your maintenance, you'll be able to survive, provided that you do not have to use money from there for capital expenditures. This is my understanding. My understanding is it becomes our responsibility as government to provide that.
I want you to just elaborate and tell me if that is the true situation that I understand it. That if capital expenditure is provided for, can USFM become viable and profitable in terms of the revenue you get based on what your maintenance is and the stuff that it's going to cost you to provide us electricity, where it can be viable and you'll be able to make money taking the other challenges. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apology for coming late and still not very well. While I was still driving coming this side, there was a big issue of a grid where they were looking about people who have been killed due to people speeding. And if you can just clarify for us, because since it's a big debate outside from here. Thank you.
Now, Chair, I just wanted to make this short comment that, you know, when we met with National Treasury, and it was on Wednesday, this issue of privatizing Eskom came up, and it came up again here today. I do want to say that the state-owned enterprises don't have a mandate to privatize. If that happens, it will be a decision probably which will come into Parliament so that it is properly validated. But I do want to say that there's no way, absolutely no way that we want Eskom to be privatized. So this subject, which keeps on coming up whenever we meet the departments, shouldn't really be an issue. What we need to be saying is how far we are able to capitalize the state-owned enterprises that require financial assistance like Eskom, like SAA, and others that might have similar problems in the future, because even those that are well off at the moment, it does not follow that they will always be have healthy balance sheets. The nature of business is such that it will be on the up and the down territory all the time, depending on the circumstances. But the question of privatizing has come out of the way.
Okay, then, so honorable members, I will allow the team to respond. I know that most of the issues were directed to Eskom, not to public enterprises, but you are free to respond. I think, honorable members, the good thing that we have the information we needed, that everybody was concerned that, you know, making all these resources available, what are these people doing? Now you have clarified. I particularly like the idea of maintenance without load shedding. I think that's the way. I think we must support that strongly. It's very important. But I think also, I think that if we're able to put a bigger picture, I like the idea that we are quite clear that there's enough capacity. 43,000 megawatts, the demand is 32. So we are dealing with this problem there, but South Africa is not about to be shut down. I think that's a very important message. And we've been very transparent as of how the money is going to be used. And of course, public enterprises, obviously, we will be engaging with you a lot in terms of how you ensure that these things happen. Because, in a sense, Eskom works for you. But I think the information we need in terms of being able to pass the bills we now have, we'll be able to have a good debate in the National Assembly, in the NCOP, about the reasons. So let me allow you to respond
to issues raised by members. Obviously, at some point we will engage with you again. Because we don't want just to say, okay, now we have approved the money, we'll see when you have a problem. We might call you again just to continue to see what you're doing. Because it's quite clear that you have a plan to sort out this problem. You have our support. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I think you corrected the bulk of the questions really related to Eskom, but there's two points that I want to respond to. And I think the first issue is the we don't want to leave with the perception that as the state we're creating irresponsible entities that will ever be dependent on the state that is fiscal. I think the picture that the CE painted of the history of where we come from is important because it shows the evolution of the challenges of the developmental state. So if providing financial injection and converting the loans into equity, we think it's an ordinary practice anyway that you provide, even with private sector companies. But in this particular case, when Cabinet considered both these issues, the 23 billion and the conversion, they also took into account the principle of fiscal neutrality. Hence, it was decided that part of the funding would come from the liquidation of non-core or non-strategic assets. So it's not like it will be all the money that it come from consumers or the taxes. So Minister of Finance has already indicated that the good progress has been made on the liquidation of those assets and he will make an announcement. So and that signifies the fact that the government is also committed to ensuring that there's a balance in terms of providing this injection. Then I think the other issue here for me, it will be on did indicate in the department's presentation that one of the things that we put into the board and even to management is the issue of ensuring a tough financial prudence because we understand that you giving this support to ESCOM, but also the companies show and indicate commitment in terms of management and accountability of those. And I like what DJ said that there will be continuous engagement through various portfolio committees and parliamentary committees to ensure that there is oversight of the management of that. Thank you.
Let me respond to the issue of the letter to the President. The ESCOM has not written a letter to the President saying what has been said here. In fact, the protocol is that we don't even ever write to the President. The Superintendent of ESCOM corresponds with the Director General of the Department, and the Chairman corresponds with the Minister and then of the President. And it is the minister who is the shareholder representative who has the official communication line to the president. So we never go to the president and correspond to the president. So we're not aware of such a letter, firstly. Secondly, the alleged contents of the letter are simply not true. They have no basis in fact. It is fiction. I don't know who came up with that idea, but it's not a good idea and it is not true. Chair, the question was asked how much and how longer. I just want to go to this slide here. If you look at this slide, Chair, and you look at our capital expenditure program, and you look at the amount of capacity that will be introduced into the system over the next 3 years, which is by 2018. So it is this 100 capacity has already been introduced in March 2015, 1,200 megawatts where we got from Majuma Recovery. But going forward, in August 2015, we will synchronize Majuma Unit 6 with 800 megawatts.
In fact, that unit 6, 800 megawatts, is already on the grid. We're utilizing 800 megawatts. As I said in my presentation, today, for example, we're only using 500 because the 300 is undergoing testing. Then there's 323 from Angola, 323 from Angola Unit 4, 323 from Angola Unit 2, 333 from Angola Unit 1, 800 megawatts by September 2015 from Meduli, and another 800 megawatts by from Kusile 1 by August 2017. If we get all of this capacity, we should be able to create headroom for if we get that capacity, we should be able to increase total available go to the portion itself. If we get all of the capacity share, we will be increase this, we will be able to increase this from 3,500 to about 50,000. And that improves the gap. But not only does it improve the gap, it allows the economy to grow. Because it can then increase 32,000 to 40,000 and still have sufficient capacity for maintenance and other things. So we think that it is just a matter of these 3 years that we need to build that capacity. In the meantime, we're going to have to manage with what we have until that capacity comes on stream. Much of that is actually about 3 or 4 years old, which means we should not be in the situation that we're in. But that's another matter. For whatever reason we're in this situation, we have the next 3 years to fix it by bringing those capital projects into line and ensuring that we have sufficient capacity and have room to allow the economy to grow, even maintain some of the old equipment or shut them down if they cannot be used any further, the ones that were built in the 1930s and the 1940s. So the question was asked, I think, several times, how much longer are we going to be in this and how are we going to get out? That capital expenditure program is our ticket out of this program. And we, by doing this appropriation and by allocating the 60 billion as we have for this year, we're making sure that that becomes a reality. On the question of the question of why consumers bear the brunt. Where's this one? No, the one that is here. The second one, yeah. Chair, in the 1980s, when we had this problem and we recovered and we were in that phase, what happened during the phase is that we were providing the cheapest electricity in the world to consumers in South Africa. People from other countries were surprised at our electricity tariffs. In fact, even today, South Africa still has the cheapest electricity tariffs, among the cheapest in the world. And that is what we did with this cash. We did not put it aside to build further capacity. We passed it on to the consumer by way of tariffs. And the question now is, so why must the consumer now bear the increase in tariffs to pay for chemical expenditure in this race? It is because this money was passed back to the consumer. When it becomes available again, the cash becomes available again, maybe we should use it wisely next time and smooth out the impact on the consumer, not make the tariff so low that the consumer believes these low tariffs are in fact a constitutional right, because that is how we talk about it. But we need to pay for electricity, we need to pay for the capital expenditure as well as the current consumption of electricity. The question is, does the 23 billion adequately address the financial challenges? Well, what addresses the financial challenges is our ability to provide the capital expenditure that is required. The 23 billion contributes to the availability of capital expenditure. It is not the entire capital expenditure that is required, as I indicated. The required capital expenditure is 280 billion. So the 23 billion helps us to improve our debt equity ratios and helps us to be able to start a conversation with the rating agencies again about our situation as a non-investment grade entity. So, as the CFO indicated earlier, as you can see, Chair, our gearing, if we do this thing, if we do this conversion of debt into equity, and it's not the conversion of the trial to implement, it's about 27 million, as well as the injection of the 20 million, will make our gearing to improve from 75% to 57%. That improves our gearing significantly. As the situation turns around and we're able to generate more revenue, and here we will improve further, and we're able to go back and have a conversation with the with rating agencies about the rating of ESCO. At the moment, that 75% hearing, it is one of the concerns that they have about our hearing. If you saw the presentation of the Director General, she raised the reasons why the rating agencies upgraded ESCO. Yes, and there was a question about how do we get that balloon to go quickly around the bottom. Unfortunately, we have to go through that phase of spending money, which is the 280 billion, to go and when we have spent the 280 billion, but before we get the benefit of the capital expenditure or by way of revenue in the future, we will have to go through that bottom. So it is a necessary, we can't jump it, it's a necessary dialectical process that we have to go there and so that we can come out. Sounds like a contradiction, but it is, yeah, we have to take medicine so that we can get there. Oh, the DJ is saying, take some medicine. The implication of interest on the debt rollovers. Look, to be honest, I expect that when we do the rollovers, well, I can't go into the details because these switches are done by way of an option. So we option and people offer us what they are prepared to take for the new debt that we're issuing in exchange of the current debt that is expiring in September. But I expect that there will be a slightly higher than what the historical debt has been issued at. Partly because since the debt was issued, our ratings also deteriorated. But I'm not worried about it because when we have been through the bottom of the trough and we start generating income, the first thing that we're going to do with the cash that we generate is to buy back debt. So we will buy back the most expensive debt. We will buy back the debt that has government guarantees so that we reduce the size of government's contingent liabilities. And improve the balance sheet of the Republic of South Africa by doing so. So we'll buy back the debt that is guaranteed and that is very expensive, and we'll issue new debt that reflects, hopefully at the time, our new credit rating. So it is at the moment we have to take the bigger medicine, we have to issue debt as whatever we can get, but I think it's a temporary situation. When that capacity comes online and we're able to generate sufficient revenue and we do not have as huge capital expenditure as we're having now, and we do not have such big cash outflows from CapEx, we'll be able to use that money to initially buy debt, and then once we're comfortable with our gearing and our debt situation, then we can decide what to do with the extra cash. But my opinion would be at that point we should plan for the next phase, so we should smooth out that wave. We should make it thinner so that it doesn't have big troughs, busts, and booms. That in both time we invest in a future bust so that it will minimize the impact. And I think that we have to introduce up to 30-year long-term planning in that work and carry out and be in a permanent state of capital investment that is moderate and not as excessive as it is at the moment. It has been a similar situation at Transnet, which is now stabilizing with capital investment. Yes, the load shedding schedule that should be adhered to, and Chair, we, as I said, maintenance without load shedding, and I was at pains to explain that my formula there excluded a certain thing called the stochastic variable. The stochastic variable is the error, the unknown, the random, the thing that you cannot predict. And so we cannot say that even if we implement maintenance without load shedding, there won't be load shedding. There will be. Because things that we have not planned for will happen in the system. And then at the moment we are prone to such things because these machines are very old. Some of them are built in the 30s, some of them are built in the 80s, 30-year-old now. So it is the size of the random variable that will determine our fate, that will determine when and how we load shed. Like I was explaining earlier, because of the random variable, which is Kamara bus are coming offline when we are not expecting it and making us lose 1,200 megawatts, and the cloud cover over the Northern Cape, which is a random outcome, that has stopped the solar from being able to give us electricity during a time when it is very cold. It is extremely cold in the last week in the whole country. Those are the things that we cannot predict, for which we're going to have to ask for South Africa's indulgence. But as far as the plan is concerned, we are planning maintenance without load shedding, subject to the error variable of the random items. It is not possible to meet load shed at midnight, because at midnight nobody is using electricity, so electricity is available. There was a minister of tax in the old Transvaal Republic in Kurestad, the Boer Republic of Kurestad, and he had about 15 taxpayers who were all farmers, and every year in his budget speech he announced an opium tax, and he was very popular minister of finance because nobody used opium. So nobody made the opium tank. So I think midnight, sitting at midnight is like charging an opium tank. Nobody. But the way that the system works is that we cannot store the electricity. We have to supply it instantaneously. And so at midnight, at 23,000, or even when we have 32,000 available, at midnight, demand is typically about 25, 26. So we have not an adequate, there is no point in motioning, but it's at the peak times, around sunset and sunrise, those are the two peaks, morning peak and evening peak, that we have maximum demand for electricity that shoots above what is available for about 2 or 3 hours, and that is why we need to load shed for 2 or 3 hours. And then also, we must remember that we issue load shedding schedules to municipalities for municipalities. So we say, okay, City of Johannesburg means so much, City of Cape Town, City of Durban, and so on and so forth, and Eskom. So we tell them we're going to load shed you so much. But they, municipalities, have the responsibility of allocating the capacity in the different parts of the municipality at different times. So we do not decide exactly which part of Cape Town, for example, gets load shed at one time, or which part of Johannesburg gets load shed at one time. We just load shed to Johannesburg, and we tell them in time that we're going to load shed you from 5 o'clock, for example. And then they decide and rotate among themselves. They have capacity and the control room to allocate. So the exact times of exactly who and when is going to be like load shed is, it's partly, not entirely. I'm not saying that we're not at fault here completely, but it is something. It is, I think we should collaborate better with the cities and the local municipalities about load shedding schedules. The conversion of the 50 billion into equity funding. I did not understand how we would distribute it amongst all the people in South Africa, but I think if government holds it on our behalf, it is our government after all, we're all shareholders in the Republic of South Africa.
Do we supply to neighboring countries? Yes, we do. Actually, we get electricity from Mozambique and we sell to Mozambique. We supply electricity to Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is on prepaid and they don't owe us and they are up to date. And Botswana as well. We supply electricity to Botswana. We have relationships with Uganda. That's the Southern African Electricity Power Pool agreement. I think the chairperson addressed the issue of the approval of the 23 billion by cabinet, because before it comes to parliament, the minister has to approach cabinet. And then I think that the honorable member there referred that there are municipalities who budget 1 billion, and that 1 billion is like the 50 billion in 6 years of the municipalities budgeted, so it's a huge amount of money, the 50 billion. It may well be so relative to the municipality, but when I was younger, I had the responsibility of managing 950 billion. Not a cent went missing. And I don't see how 50 billion is a big problem. I think we'll be able to handle it. You know, it's not like you just go to bed. And that was even when I was younger. Now I'm a bit older and wiser, so 50 billion should be fine. And we have an extremely competent team at the ESOP that will make sure that we do not have adverse findings from the Auditor General, which have, by the way, that I have had in my career. With a much more bigger responsibility than just the 60 billion. I think the exit capacity will be resolved. You'll be aware that Eskom has not had a CEO for, I think, 2 weeks now, because we had a CEO and a CFO, and they have just resigned, and I think that the government is in the process of resolving the issue of getting permanent appointments into Eskom's critical positions, filling the critical posts. I think that what has been impressed certainly by cabinet and the minister is that we need to resolve the situation as a matter of urgency. So there was a question about why we are having loadshedding at all, and I think I was at pains to explain how it happens. The total debt of Eskom financial officer, who is, by the way, a chartered accountant, a very young chartered accountant.
Not too young, Chair. Chair, in terms of the debt that we have in the books, it is about 298 billion rand, but I want to give context that in relation to assets of about 457 billion. So you know that we are busy building assets and we have kept capital to spend 61 billion this year and past year 280, and over the years we've already built to a total of an asset base of 457 billion, and a portion of that basically had to be financed through debt. And that has accumulated about 298 billion of debt. But I just went back and compared that to 2005, when we were just beginning to build assets. And you will see that debt was only about 20 billion in 2005 in Eskom's book, compared to the 298 billion. And the asset base was so much lower as well, at about 55 billion. So you can see the impact of building the assets, having to finance it through debt.
Yeah, there was a question about tube leaks and what we can do to reduce it. Now, tube leaks are the boiler in a power station has a tube that runs through it, about 50 kilometers of tubes that run through it that have water that gets heated, and it is a steam that turns the turbines. So it is when one of the tubes is leaking, even if it is just a needle hole in a tube, it's a tube leak. And the engineers have to switch off the boiler because they can't go in because it's too hot until the cool down, which takes time. And then they have to go in and find the leak and then fix it. Typically just cutting the pipe and replacing it, welding it again, and then treat, and then start firing up the thing. That's why it takes 3 days. It's about switching off from very high temperatures and then to firing it up again after fixing the fixing of the tube leak itself is not a very long process, but it's the process of switching off and switching on of the boiler. Now the question is, how do we reduce them? There's only one way of reducing them. We
we can reduce 2 weeks, and we can put into our system a computerized system of preventative maintenance. So if we can find out about a tubing before it happens, and we know that next week Wednesday, the Duva 6 boiler is going to have a tubing. So if we can have that kind of intelligent system, we will be able, instead of waiting for the tubing to happen during peak on Wednesday, we can take it off on Saturday and fix the tubing before it happens. Or we can take it off on Saturday night at midnight with the switch of the machine, fix the tubing before it happens so that we don't have to wait next week Wednesday. The problem is that these machines are old. They were built before they were computers. And so they do not have very good preventative maintenance systems. The new ones that have been built have got better capabilities because they've got more computerization. They were built in they are being built in the age of the Internet of Things, where we have a lot of information about any one of our machines that we never had on machines that were built in the 50s and the 40s. Even the machines that were built in the 80s. The 80s was before the Internet. In the 1980s, there was not even email. There was no cell phone. So we have much better technology now. There has been exponential growth in knowledge and technology over the last 20 years, such that the new machines are going to give us much better preventative maintenance capabilities than we don't have. But it's like the car in Cuba. They very bad at warning you that they're about to break down. Not like the Mercedes-Benz that we drive now, or the Toyota Corolla even that we drive now. But somehow we have to think like the Cubans. How do we keep those machines running, even though they were built before the revolution? And so that is actually what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to get better at maintaining very old machines for quite some time before we can get the benefit of new technology. And the question that was asked was about the people that were killed. They were not killed. There was a shooting in Midubi, I think yesterday morning. What happened there, there's an illegal strike going on in Midubi, where people are demanding to be paid a bonus by the contractors, but that strike is not protected. Initially there were about 10,000 people on strike. Now, quite a lot of the people that were on strike have come back to work, and there is tension among the people that are still on strike and the people that have gone back to work, and people that are engaging on an illegal strike. But we have said a welcome comeback. The labor relations legislation in South Africa is quite clear, and actually is very generous about how and when you can declare strike. They think that strike is actually treasonous. Because how does a group of people or a union for that matter call an illegal strike at the time when we need to deal with load shedding, and when load shedding is a national crisis? So the tactic of the people that are continuing to be on an illegal strike, because now the majority of the workers are back at work, they're working at midnight, is to intimidate the majority that are at work. So yesterday morning, people were waiting for transport to take them to work. And apparently a wide VW all stopped and they opened the fire on a group of people that were waiting for transport with a light machine gun. But nobody died. As far as I know, the report that I got as of yesterday last night, there are only 2 people were injured. But the police are attending to the matter. In fact, the situation is so bad that on Sunday morning we got a bomb threat at Midubi. There was an SMS that said, somebody said, I planted 3 bombs at Fusile and they go off today. So we had to stop work for many hours. The police, the bomb squad came and they searched and they eventually declared the place safe. The intelligence services are now trying to track the source of the threat, but we think it is totally unnecessary. There is things like that are delaying the 3 years, because even those few hours when we're looking for an unexistent bomb because of an irresponsible SMS add up to the delays. Even yesterday, when everybody is traumatized by the shooting and Fed has to stop because people are talking about the shooting, and meetings are called to counsel people because people were really killed. Other people become scared to come to work. I think it is actually treason. It is criminality of the highest order. We are confident that the police are on top of the situation. And the last question was actually a comment on privatization, which in our position we can only note. Thank you, sir.
Honorable members, let me thank the department and ESCOM, DG, CEO. Thank you very much. We are very enlightened. You have our support to turn around the situation there. We'll continue. Like Honorable Shoppestol always says, we like following the money. And that's our work. And when the deputy minister came to see me to say, can we fast track the bill so that we can get ESCOM to get mine, I said, I'm going to phone Ryan and tell him I'll be nice to me. Otherwise, you're getting no money. and I said, Shukran, you better be here. Thank you very much for coming at such a short notice. From our side, we'll ensure that by next week we'll do public hearings. We are now better informed. And hopefully, by the week of the 24th of June, the National Assembly will sit to consider and adopt the budget so that the minister can transfer the first tranche that you are looking forward to. We want to see ESCOM working, and we are happy with the plans that you have now put in place, that there is light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you very much. Drive safely home. Honorable members, I won't keep you longer for today. I know you have to catch flights. Just to check, is there anything urgent? We will consider minutes next week. When we come back next week, Wednesday, we start at 10. Yes. Otherwise, have a good weekend. Thank you very much.